couple of points in this race, because we're going to work from charts later, and the charts we're working from do not include this particular race. I want you to look at this for just a moment. We've already talked about it. If this race were run today, same contenders with Mr. Bulge out, who'd win this race 90% of the time?
No.
Don't give me the wrong answer on this one. Eileen, Saros Town.
Which on the graph.
90%. The only reason Saros Town didn't win here is because Mr. Bulge happened to be in. And Mr. Bulge is capable of throwing a 44-2 at these horses. And he had so much reserve energy by not going to the lead that he just put him away. If Saros Town doesn't get put away, he wins the race. So that's the surprise. If you're surprised with Shady Pine, he just picked up a horse that was a little used. Horses to watch list. We're going to create one today, and I want you to put one of them on right now.
Yes.
Which one is Saros really does.
Yes, it does. Yeah. 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 This is our
Saros would win this race. Yeah. 9 times out of 10, probably, if they needed it without Mr. Bull.
Saros,
Howard, please.
I'm showing them what you're showing them. What you said, where's that graph?
Add Saros Town to your horses to watch list. I had him on mine prior to this race. Had no idea he would draw somebody like Mr. Bowles here. But I still have him on my horses to watch list. I want you to read something in the chart. I hope you're paying attention to these charts when you get them back. Read what it says about Saros Town. Moved up to engage, I'll read it for you. Moved up to engage for the early lead, vied for the advantage around the far turn while inside Mr. Bowles, which is already a little bit of a disadvantage, weakened in the drive, and then worked out a mile in 1:39.1 following the finish. Okay. Now, which tells me one thing. It tells me that the trainer probably thought there was a very good chance he'd lose this race to start with Mr. Bowles in there, and I would have thought the same thing. But it also, this is not something the rider just decides to do, is it? The rider's instructed to work this horse out to a mile. So where do you think Saros Town will appear in a week or so, maybe 2 weeks? No, not at 6, right? No.
A mile or a mile and 16th,
sure. He's being pointed for that here. But adding to your horses to watch list, this is a talented horse. He's a good horse. He just can't sprint with a horse like Mr. Bowles. He may wind up, three races from now, he may be a better horse. He may be a router. And the other one's not, but he can't sprint with that guy.
Tom?
Yes?
You said that you read here that Saros Town was inside of Mr. Bowles. And you said that was a disadvantage.
A little bit of a disadvantage. How many times, I'll tell you what happens. How many times have you seen two horses running around the turn? One of them slightly outside the other and sitting on it. Which one of those horses generally wins?
Outside.
It's the horse that's keeping the pressure on from the outside, generally. Not always. But generally, that's the horse that wins, because he's got him measured, and then he goes on by. And that's what was happening to Saros Town. Mr. Bulge had him measured at all times. Because if you look at the fractions these horses can run, Mr. Bulge can throw a 21-2, 44-2 action. So guess who's running under control at that point and who's not? Saros Town's being used to get 44-3. Mr. Bulge got plenty of reserve. He's got him measured all the time. So he was being intimidated probably a little bit. I would guess a high percentage of that. Well, got another horse as well. Yes.
If the positions were reversed, Mr. Bowles was on the rail.
Mr. Bowles is still drawing away from it.
Yeah,
I'm saying
that.
Okay.
But he would still be measuring the other ones. It isn't the fact that he was next to the rail.
No. But what I'm saying, he's an inferior horse pace-wise, Saros Town. And he's got a superior horse sitting right on his flank outside. And in this case, it's negative. Because the other one's going to take him in any time. Now, if Mr. Bulge is inside of it, he's going to draw away from it, too. But this made it even worse. The other horse to watch in here is Pointedly. Now, like I said, I don't know what Loggy was smoking when he entered this horse, because there are plenty of non-winners and ones for fillies, for God's sake. But he really had a sharp horse, and this might have been the only race in the condition book at that time, so he put her in there. She ran very well here. the surprise, and this race, if you'll analyze it afterward, is that she would only pay $10.60 if she won, and Mr. Bowles would pay $7. And she can go 21-2, but after she went 21-2, she flattened out to a 45, right? Yeah. Mr. Bowles can throw a 21-2 and go into 44-2. What's going to happen to her? She had almost no chance here. So she ran very well in a race that she had very little or no chance. The villain here, the betters have made her 4-1. And that just shows a lack of understanding of the pace. But again, final time is still the dominant factor that people use at the races. And she did run 1:16.4. That's pretty good. Okay.
Well, you've had a three little things before the star's real performance.
You think that's good, folks? Wait until the real show goes. Tom's going to take the before lunch and after lunch and divide it into two things so you'll have lunch star to digest it. I mean, we won't eat till for a while yet. donuts and coffee, anything you want.
Graph.
One of the things. Yeah, graph. I'm going to do another graph here while Nick's. Somebody, Joe wants me to graph the race after the fact as it happened, which I'll be very happy to do. And don't be surprised if they don't come out 1, 2, 3 with that.
You can see the look on their face in anticipation.
Another graph. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Look at them up here. They're wanting another graph.
Go. We can turn that off now, Jimmy. I just wanted to get it circulate the air. The one important thing we've got to talk about, in which Tom's technique of horses to watch takes into consideration more than anything else, but if you're not using an immediate horses to watch, such as the technique that Tom will demonstrate, you need some evidence of when your horse is in form. Because he's only going to run to his capacity when he's in form, and therefore the form cycle is very important. Now, there are a lot of ways of measuring form cycles. Your computer can do it, but Dick Schmidt has worked out a way to be fitting his own particular status, which is a simple way. So here for a simplistic look at form cycle, which really works, as evidenced by Dick's prodigious income. So nice when these guys make so much I don't have to pay them for teaching. You knew that, didn't you?
Yes, oh yes. Had that drummed into me over the years. No money.
Dick Smith.
Thank you.
Yep. Mr. Congenial. Mr. You blew it, so you didn't get that letter. I'm going to run this for you.
This is sort of an extemporaneous speech. Howard sways up and down 8 years. When I talked to Howard a couple, 3 weeks ago, I asked him, well, what do you want me to do this workshop? Do that thing you did in New Orleans about morning line betting. And I'm going to do that this afternoon. Then when I got out here, I opened up this manual, and lo and behold, I'm going to do spotting improving horses in the form cycle. Surprise! But luckily enough, that's something I have been working on, and I guess I must have mentioned it to Howard. So it's nothing of putting you on the spot. I'll tell you, if you ever get involved with speaking to these groups out here, you'll learn to be a good off-the-cuff speaker, because that's the only way we ever work. We never know what we're going to do in advance. But as I said to the class yesterday, when I was just sort of winging it, I don't keep a horse's to watch list very often, because I'm an irregular player, although I'm getting back to the races now on a pretty much full-time basis. And I have such a dreadful memory that I can't remember. The way Tom keeps his horses to watch list is he just remembers what's on the horses to watch list. I have to keep them on little 3x5 cards and look up every horse. And unless I'm, you know, sitting out in the infield or down in the cheap seats, sort of kick back, I just don't have time to do all that. And certainly when I'm handicapping and playing off track, I just don't have time to look up every horse in every race and see if it on the horses to watch this and then analyze it from that point of view. The way I keep a horses to watch list in the past was I just wrote down Tom's horses to watch list. And that worked out pretty well. I made a lot of money off his horses to watch list, but I, again, the 3x5 drives looking up, but there weren't that many of them. But making my own and doing the analysis and all that, I've just never been able to get myself to do it. But I wanted to show you Howard loves graphs. He makes graphs. He's in there making graphs right now. I make forms. We're all different. I'm a form maker, he's a graph maker. You know, he can kid me about my forms, I'll kid him about his graphs. His graphs, Michael was talking when he was out here about people who are visually oriented, and people who are auditory oriented, people who are tactile, and Howard's very visually oriented. He likes graphs. I prefer to look at the numbers and the rankings and the relative order of things. But that's just a psychological quirk on both of our parts. There's no good way and bad way. I know Spencer gets a lot out of graphs, and he shows me these graphs. Look, you can see this horse is going to win. Sure enough, that horse is going to win. And I look at it and I say, what? I can't figure out his graphs, but that's okay. He can. He looked at the numbers that I make, and he can't figure them out. But that's okay. I can. So you can always tell when I'm getting serious about going back to racing, I start producing charts. Lots of them. Lots of them. And I fill them out. Michael brought a chart out. I think most of you were last time. A worksheet. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it. I hated it. Couldn't stand it. I said, that's too much work. I didn't want to sit there and fussily fill all this stuff out. I want to be one of the big boys. I want to be Jim Bradshaw. This and then this and Dickie. But because I'm at least semi-open to new ideas, I gave Michael's form. Particularly after he handed me one of these forms filled out and said, who's going to win this race? And I handicapped and got win and place. I ran first, second, and fourth off the chart without opening the form. I said, wait a minute, there's something here. This is a good idea. So I started using his chart and won 14 in a row at one stretch and really did very well with it. But his chart is idiosyncratic. It's designed for his handicap, which is as it should be. I don't think it's very universal. I made my own chart for my own handicapping. And it's idiosyncratic in that it focuses on what I look at. And I would urge you to do the same thing. We're not talking rocket science here, guys. And I didn't do it on the Macintosh. I did it with a pencil and a ruler, and I photocopied it, and it worked out great. 15-minute investment in time. The part that I want to talk about, this is pretty basic stuff. Name, APB, class, TBS number, does it meet the matchup, and a column for ESP. But it's this part of the chart, the little squares, that I want to talk about. And basically what you're looking at is form cycle analysis, because this is something that dovetails very nicely with a horse to watch. Yesterday Tom made the point that when he has a real stick-out horse to watch, he sends it out to everybody. But when he's got a really good one, a really sly one that's going to make a lot of money, he keeps it for himself. He doesn't give it to you guys. When he has one that's a little marginal, he doesn't send it out because he knows that here's a horse that ran a $16,000 race in a $10,000 race. And he figures if it's entered back at 10 or 12.5, this horse is open for business. But if it comes back at 16, it's just another horse. And if it comes back over 16, it's still not a good bet.
And he knows that there are owners and trainers out there with illusions of grandeur that very well may take a horse that wins big at 10 and step him up to 20. Step it up to 16, where the horse has no advantage. And yet if you send it out on a horse to watch, people will just blindly bet it. And that works out pretty well when you're talking about the big cap. People blindly bet it and they got $30,000 back for their... We had one guy hit it twice from horses to watch list, and there was a couple here yesterday that hit it once. And they were all delirious with joy. But, and when it pays that much, you really can't say in the long run they'll lose money. Because, man, that long run is still 1997 at $5 a crack. Come on. for most of these horses, particularly wind betting, in the long run, it probably isn't such a great play. And you have to pick your spots for the horse to watch. The fact that a horse to watch is a great horse to watch at 16 and a mediocre horse to watch at 20, it can be a very poor horse to watch at 32. And one of the ways you can do it is to check your form cycles and see what this horse does. Now, this is dirt simple, guys. What I do, you know, we all know pluses and O's. And possibly an O. They go down here. I'm just making this up as I go, so don't expect any real great shifting patterns here. My own particular way of doing this is a horse will not get a plus unless I catch a choke kicking on it. Period. If he runs fourth, beaten by a head, in other words, there's three horses in front of him this far, he still gets a plus. I must catch a show ticket to get a plus. He must be within 4 3/4 lengths to get a circle, to get a plus in the middle. Everything else is an O. And that's my own personal guideline.
Is that the finish only?
At the finish only. I don't bet on horses at the second call. I mean, they don't pay off very well. Howard looks at horses at the second call and says, the horse that was up close to the second call and still got beaten and things like that. I'm looking at form cycles. Now, this is not totally betting. And yeah, I'll look back at the second call. If I see a horse beaten 5 and he was at the lead, you know, okay. But no, the horse that's up in the lead at the second call and beaten by 8 gets an O. Period. That's just... Now, because I really don't care about that second call. Now, in my race analysis, I may go in and say, wait a minute, he was in the lead at a 44 and puked it up. Okay, today he's going to face a 45-2. I have to reevaluate this horse. I'm not saying this is cast in concrete, or that I'm going to say, okay, this horse has O's, out he goes. None of this, this is just one tool. Yes, ma'am?
Are those horses and O's for the second tool?
No, this is for the finish position. Just the way we've been doing it ever since forever. But what I have done, the reason I divided this into two for each horse is after I do a plus and O, I'm now going to do a third fraction, an FFER, on each horse. And...
on each horse or each past performance?
Oh, on each past performance and both. And I'll just write it down in there. And I'll normally, this column, this one, every horse, every time, without fail. Unless it was a mile and a quarter race or, you know, the jockey fell off. If he's in a mile and a quarter race today and his last race was 6 furlongs and it means absolutely nothing to you, I still do this. I always look at the last. I just think that's vitally important. And in my handicapping, I may go start ignoring it, but I'll always look at that form cycle. And to look at a form cycle, you have to look at the last. Normally, I'll do the last couple. And if I see the horse looks good, the better he looks, the more numbers he gets up there. And some horses,
if, let's say I'm seeing an 87, and my next horse here, his last number's a 65. He's done. I'm finished. Unless there's some excuse, you know, I'll glance back. But if that 65 looks pretty typical for him, I'll end up. You don't need to go any further than that. If you've seen what you did. Plus, don't forget, before I even start this, I've already done PBS numbers on all those horses. So I pretty well have a feel by now. I've got APB, class, PBS, and whether he can meet the matchup. And so I have a pretty good understanding on this. And I have found that for whatever reason, putting it out vertically instead of horizontally, and having all the horses right here on one page, just stacked on top of each other, things seem to come off the page a little better at them. I see patterns like this. Here's an old race, and he runs too good, and he's improving. I said, well, why? What happened here? Was he facing a blistering pace? Is this a 16,000, this is a 16,000, and this is a 25? In other words, I want to know what the rationale is and see if I can see it. We talk about plus-o pattern. And if his plus was the last week expecting, oh, or Ricky working. Maybe there's something else. Maybe this is a 12.5, or this is a 16, this is a 12.5, this is a 32, this is a 25, back to 16. Okay, we've got a pretty good indication that this horse can run well at a certain level. Or maybe these are against 45 second fractions, this is against a 44.3, this is a 44.4. There's a 45 and 1, 44 and 3, 44 and 2. This horse can't handle lower than 45. If he's against a 45 today, this horse is legit. If he's against a 44 and 4, he's semi-legit. If it's a 44 and 3, kiss him goodbye. And the patterns, in other words, you've got some question marks here. Why did he go from a lousy number to a great number? What happened? Maybe this is a muddy track. Take a look out the window and see what the weather's like today. Maybe it's vice versa. Maybe these two are muddy tracks and these two are fast tracks. Again, how's the track running? So you can just kind of, I find that I get a better picture. Now I do two other things here. I have a box here. Actually, I have two over here. I'll talk about those. Over here, I had a box that I labeled matchup. And originally, I was just putting a check in there if the horse could meet the matchup. And then I had here one ESP. And I put if the horse was early or sustained presser or whatever. And this one, I labeled it average, but I'm going to call it EFFER, for expected final traction. I don't like averages. I think the word average implies that you add these numbers up and divide by 1.5. And that is a nonsense figure as far as I'm concerned. What I'm doing now is instead of just putting a check in the matchup column, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, I've got a projected pace. That's the first step in the race. Before I do anything else, I run APB in class the night before and then I project my pace. That's when I open the form up, I got my APB in class done. Now, who's going to take the lead? What's my pace?